asset managers earlier this year welcomed the move by Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana to amend Regulation 28 of the Pension Funds Act, which would allow insurance, retirement and savings funds to invest 45% of assets offshore. But they have warned that this may result in as much as 800 billion rand in outflows from SA's asset pool over the next 3 to 5 years. Joining me to make sense of it all is the Deputy MD of 91, Sanjith Sunath. Thank you so much for your time, Sanjith. So the easing of the allocation limit for offshore investments has been welcomed. Before I get into what it means for asset managers, take us through the mechanics of the changes and what it means for clients.
Good evening, Zanati, and to the viewers. Thank you for having me live. So firstly, as you say, it's a really positive development for South African investors. The offshore limit for retirement funds, the amount that they could take outside of South Africa was 30%. Over and above that, there was a 10% that investors could take into Africa. That has now changed into a single offshore limit of 45%. So effectively, if a client in the past took 30% into global equities, they now can take as much as 45% into global equities. So significantly more opportunity. And if you think about it, you know, the question is, why is it positive for SA investors? And the South African market, whether you look at it from a GDP perspective or from an index perspective, accounts for less than 1% of the global market. So the opportunity set increases significantly.
Sanjith, let's talk about the broader implications then for the asset management industry. I mean, one of the unintended consequences that's been flagged is the closure of rand-denominated offshore feeder funds. Why are they so important, firstly, and what could lead to their closure?
I think obviously clients construct investments in various different ways. So you have some clients who choose multi-asset portfolios, which basically means they choose a balanced fund where they leave the manager the decisions to invest in global equities or global bonds or global real estate. And then you have some clients who choose to invest using specific building blocks. And when I say building blocks, they choose equities separately to bonds, separately to local, separately to global. So if feeder funds do close as a consequence of this harmonization of exchange controls, it does mean that certain implementation methods would be more difficult. So certain clients will find it more difficult to implement their solution by using offshore feeder funds.
Mm. And with this, to resolve this issue, I mean, would there be a need to then increase that offshore investment limit?
Yeah, I mean, I think that really is it. I mean, it's really making sure that companies who have offshore limits, have the ability to take more offshore. There's a few ways of that being able to manifest. The one is increasing that 45% further for collective investment schemes and life companies who generate the offshore capacity to pass on to end investors. And the other mechanism is if a company is able to get investments into domestic assets, then that generates the additional 45% that they can use then to create feeder funds, which investors can ultimately buy. So those are the two mechanisms. It's either increasing it or gaining assets which are far more domestic in nature in South Africa.
Yeah. Sanjith, I actually want to go back to those mechanics, because you said before this amendment, 30% was allowed for offshore and then 10% for the rest of Africa. But now with this, you know, the Africa investment being rolled into the 45, that means that investors could essentially choose to take all their money offshore. I'm wondering then if that does not discourage investment away from the rest of Africa.
Look, I mean, it really is a choice of the investor in constructing the right portfolio. Mm. So it gives you more flexibility, and, you know, with more flexibility and more responsibility comes more power. And you know, somebody then needs to very clearly decide how much they invest in Africa, ex South Africa, and how much that investor chooses to invest in global equities. But that is an important point in these changes. Mm. You know, the power goes to the investor to decide. Whereas in the past, when it was 30% global limits, I mean, it was a scarce resource. And so most investors use that for the highest growth potential investing globally. So they chose global equities. Now, when the limit increases to 45, they've got a choice. They can invest in global bonds. They can invest in emerging markets, excluding South Africa. They can invest in debt globally. They can invest in emerging market debt. They can invest in Africa equities, Africa debt. And so it's important for investors who are listening to make sure that they partner with financial advisors, with advice businesses who can skillfully make those decisions, and then choose asset managers who have the skills to manage across those various asset classes. But you're absolutely right. It means that the choice then becomes completely flexible and the investors get to decide what to do with that.
Okay, which is great for the clients. But I understand that even with the 10% allocation before, that wasn't really being fully used. Why is that?
Look, you know, it depends on opportunity. So a lot of that allocation, you know, was used in elements of African equities. Clients want liquidity. Clients want to access their money fairly simply. Clients want to create opportunities very easily. And you know, there weren't sufficient opportunities that they were able to find in certain markets. Some managers did find opportunities in Africa equities, some in Africa debt. But a very, very small component of that was used because relative to the risk that clients were taking in South Africa, they didn't really see the value in adding additional amounts into Africa, excluding South Africa.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Sanjeet, for simplifying that for us. That was the Deputy MD of 91, Sanjeet Sunath.